Welcome to the Weekend Messages podcast from Outpost Church Ministries and Pastor Philip Gonzalez. Our mission is to drive back the darkness by helping people flourish for the glory of God, and we hope this message helps you do just that. We'd love to get to know you, so visit us online at outpostchurch.org to find more ways to connect, give, and grow. And remember, you matter to Jesus, so you matter to us. And if you're in Christ, then you are an outpost of the kingdom of God.
Oh, y'all having a good night so far? Yeah. Man, I am. You know, I am thinking that I just saw a really weird Did y'all just see a weird flicker in the lights? Okay, if that happens, let's just pretend that we didn't. We'll just ignore it and we won't talk about it. You know, like you do with your families about really uncomfortable issues, right? Isn't that... do y'all want to do that? All right. Several weeks ago, I had the privilege of walking into a coffee shop called the Rebel Coffee Roastery and Tea Lounge. And it was a brand new shop that had only been open for about 2 months. And I started to talk with the owner. His name is Yuri. He is from Germany, and he has this delightful accent that's very understandable, but it's also so, it's exotic enough to be interesting, but not so strange that you can't understand what he's saying. And I'm fully aware that was like half German, half British. So if my mom was from Germany and my dad was from Britain, that's what I'm, okay. So I went and I started talking with Yuli, and I asked him, I said, hey, do you have an open mic night? And he said, we would like to, but all my PA system is still in Germany, so we don't have the equipment we need. So I said, hey, our church has an extra set of speakers and soundboard and microphones that we don't even use. How about we let you use that? Because as the people of Outpost Church, we believe Jesus is what?
Generous.
So we try to be too. So of course he said, yes. And so we did. So we took and we set all that stuff up. And so over the next few months, about every couple of Fridays, I would go over and play songs for their open mic night. Now, the funny thing about the open mic night there at Level is if you want to have a really good open mic night, you need a person to own it. You know what I mean by own it? They are the ones that try to get people to come. They are the MC who talks to the crowd. They're the one who hands out the sign-up clipboard for people to sign up to do stuff. Well, they didn't have that at Rebel, and I'm surely not going to sign up for that. You know why? Because I've got 120 other things to do anyway. Someone asked me the other day, they called up and said, hey, Pastor Philip, would you be interested in sitting down for 30 minutes to hear a presentation about how you can make more money? I said, no, because I'm already at 120% capacity in my life, so I don't care how good the offer is, I ain't got time for that. Tell your neighbor, I ain't got time for that. Some of you, that was painful because of the grammar, so forgive me. So anyway, so Rebel doesn't have a good open mic night, but it's there, the mic is open, and so I go periodically. Well, last night was the last night that I was there using our equipment, or I thought I was going to use our equipment, but Yuli had already gotten his stuff from Germany. And so he had his cool speakers set up and his microphone. So my wife and my family and I went last night to the Rebel Coffee Roastery and Tea Lounge, and I played a song by this guy. This is John Mayer. Now John Mayer has been around for a while. He's a pop star. And see, the problem with me and open mic nights is I never really cared much to learn cover songs by other people. I just wasn't interested. I either wrote my own or sang things to lead worship. And so I don't know a lot of pop songs. And so one song I do know is this song. It's called Waiting on the World to Change. Anybody know that title by any chance? Okay. So it's a good song. You want to hear it? What's that? Oh, okay. Well, here, I know that you were hoping that I would play and sing because you never get to hear that, you know, when I did. So it's just this really... So we'll keep on waiting on the world to change. We'll keep on waiting on the world to change. play more, but I'm pretty sure we'd get in trouble for copyright infringement because I'm not really allowed to do that publicly. Okay, so that's the song. Now, here is why I bring it up, right? It's a great song. Came out on August 1st, 2006. It was the opening track of John Mayer's third studio album called Continuum. And it won the Grammy Award at the 49th Annual Grammys for the Best Male Pop Vocal. It went on to top charts for the U.S. pop. Like, it was a really popular song. In fact, it got rave reviews in all the music publications and things like that. Now, here's my problem with the song. Consider the phrase in the chorus, "We'll keep on waiting for the world to change." I wonder, have you ever waited for something in your life to change and you're still waiting? Right, because here's what I discovered. The problem with waiting on something to change is it might not be the change that you want, that you get. Have you had that happen before, I wonder? Now, and so the reason I bring this up then is because if you want the world to change, then there's a key truth that you've got to know and you've got to apply. And here's what it is. If you're taking notes, write this down. It's the big idea for our message tonight. The steps you choose to take determine the change you get to make. The steps you choose to take determine the change you get to make. And so it is that when Jesus calls us to follow him, what he's not doing is calling us to an easy chair life, but he's calling us to an engaged life. In fact, we could say it this way, that Jesus doesn't call us to follow him and wait. And yes, there's things we have to wait for. I get that. Don't tell me afterwards. What about when he comes again? We're waiting for that. Yes, I know. That's not what I'm talking about. He calls us to follow him to work. And so it is that we've been exploring this series called the Sermon on the Mount. And what you begin to find as you explore the Sermon on the Mount is there is a lot of activity that Jesus is describing. So much, in fact, that we could even call it revolutionary. And so that's why we have the title of our series. Take a look. We call it The Jesus Revolution, 8 Ancient Teachings from the Sermon on the Mount that can change our world today. Because it's great if you want to be waiting on the world to change, but I'd argue that it's better to be a part of the solution. Amen? So we began to learn about this last week, and we discovered this truth. You can see it on the screen from last week, that the way of Jesus was never about overthrowing a state. Right? It's not that kind of revolution. It's about undermining a system. What system? The system of the world that says, claw your way to success at whatever the cost. Climb your way to the top no matter who you have to step on to get there. Grab all you can all you get, sit on the lid, and burn the rest. Have y'all ever heard that? It's a great phrase. Bad way to live, though. He wanted to undermine the system that the world does it. The kind of revolution that Jesus offers is not just about breaking down something old and leaving it, but rather it's about building something new and inviting people into it. And we found out this last week when we discovered what it looks like to have the blessed life. We said that God's blessing isn't just about outward results. It's the power of an inward reality. We explored that last week. We have really finally done a good job at getting our podcasts updated on the website. So you can go to outpostchurch.org and listen to all the previous messages, except last week. But we'll get it up there this time, I promise. Right? So it's an inward reality, but here's what we discovered. The linchpin of the argument, the key thought that we need to understand if we want to live the blessed life and be a part of the Jesus Revolution. Here's what it is. Living in God's kingdom means letting go of yours. See, if you and I are still grasping and gasping, trying to build our own kingdoms our own way, that's a surefire ticket to strife. But when more and more people are pursuing God's kingdom instead of their own, you know what that produces? Is unity and harmony and peace. But of course, if you want people to follow God's kingdom, well, you have to ask the question, why would anyone want to pursue and live in God's kingdom if they don't know what it's like? And so it is that tonight we get to explore a little bit about what Jesus says we get to do to show people what the kingdom is like. And it's a message I'm calling light and salt. Light and salt. In fact, turn to your neighbor and tell them, let's get salty. Let's get salty. Yeah, that's right. Not salty language, thank you. This is a family event. All right, if you have a Bible, turn with me to Matthew 5. It will not be on the screen. You will get to use your very own eyes and your very own resource to find your passage. Now, Matthew 5 is the beginning of what we said earlier, the Sermon on the Mount. Most scholars believe that this was a specific sermon, but that also Matthew may have included some other highlights woven into the narrative, because Matthew's purpose in the Sermon on the Mount, and in fact in his whole gospel, the gospel of Matthew, wasn't the same purpose that Luke had. Now Luke, the third gospel, his purpose, he tells you right in the beginning, was to provide an orderly account of all the things that Jesus said and did, so that people could have certainty about the things that they've been taught. Matthew's focus was less about an orderly chronology and more about a complete picture of Jesus as the Messiah. And so it is that he includes these teachings of Jesus in the Sermon on the Mount. And in Matthew 5, starting in verse 13, we find this passage that's quite popular. Maybe you've heard it, maybe you haven't. Here's what it says. Matthew 5, verse 13. Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth. But if the salt should lose its taste, how can it be made salty? It is no longer good for anything but to be thrown out and trampled on by men. You are the light of the world. A city situated on a hill cannot be hidden. No one lights a lamp and puts it under a basket, but rather on a lampstand, and it gives light for all who are in the house. In the same way, let your light shine before men so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father in heaven." This is the word of the Lord. Now, salt and light. Light and salt. Before we even dig into it, I think it's important to have some context, because you and I have some understanding about what salt is, what light is, right? But it's a very 20/21st century understanding. Let me show you a picture of one of the things they would have understood as salt. Next slide. This is a picture of, well, salt that's collected and condensed, and it is obviously not something you would really put on your food, right? It's a whole big chunk, crystal of salt. Now, in this part of the world, Middle East, primarily their salt source was the Dead Sea. Now, I've had the privilege of going to the Dead Sea. It's a really cool place. You may have heard that you can lie on your back and just float in the water really easily. That is true. It's also freaky, but I highly recommend it if you happen to be in that area. But what the people in this time period would do is they would take large amounts of water from the Dead Sea, and they would put it in pits, and they would basically let the water evaporate, which would leave the salt minerals behind. Then they would collect the salt minerals, and you know, different ways they would try to purify it and whatnot, but they would come up with salt. Next slide. Light was not provided by handy LEDs like we have here, but it was provided in many ways, but often by oil lamps. So this is an example of an oil lamp from the time period of Jesus, and you can see how they would pour the oil, often olive oil, in the top, in the center, and then they would light. They typically put a wick inside, and they would light the oil on the spout side, and that's how they would have light. There's a little bit of context. Who would say that you are glad that we no longer light our world with that? Right? Yeah, because it's, you know, it's pretty cool for ambiance, but not great if you want to actually do something. So that's what they were. But what did they do in that time period? When Jesus' first listeners would have heard, "You are the salt of the earth, and you are the light of the world," what would they have understood that to mean? Well, what I want to do tonight is walk through three groups of qualities in both light and salt and explore together what it could mean for us as we live our lives. Sound like a plan? Tell your neighbor, that's a plan. That's a plan. Good. All right. Next slide. If you're filling in notes, you can fill these in. Here's what light and salt do. Light enables and salt preserves. If you're filling in blanks, you can put these in there. You know, not too long ago, a few weeks ago, I was here at the church building, and I was in the back in the tech booth, and I was underneath the desk counter area running cables. Because how many have noticed there's a lot of screens around here? You notice that? Right, guess what? Those screens don't just magically appear stuff. There's cabling, and I ran a lot of it. We got a chance to get some video switchers and some cables and all kind of stuff, splitters. So I was underneath there, and do you know, it's really hard to plug cables in when you don't have any light to see what you're doing, right? Have you ever had that happen where a light gets unplugged in your room and it's the only one, and you have the plug, and you're right at the electrical socket, but you can't quite get it in? Have you had that happen before?
Yeah,
you just, like, gosh, if I could just get a little light, then I could plug in the light better, right? Light enables you to do things. You need that. Now, here's what I believe Jesus is saying. When he says you are the light of the world, one thing he means is your mission is to, watch this, enable the good in yourself and others. Do you know that you can be a person who, by your presence and by your actions, you can be the enabling force that helps others live in the way that God has called them to? You can do it that way. In fact, we see this in Ephesians 5. Take a look at this example. Now, the Apostle Paul is writing to a church in the city of Ephesus. And look at what he says. He says, "For you were once," what's that word?
Darkness.
We said earlier, you can't do much in darkness. "You were once darkness, but now you are," what?
Light
in the Lord. "Walk as children of light," and watch this, "for the fruit of the light results in all," what's that word?
Goodness
and righteousness and truth. Listen, what if there were all sorts of good things that could happen in the world around you, but they were waiting on you to be the light to enable them to happen? What if there were all sorts of things, people around you that would be ready and willing to step up, but they were waiting for you to show them the way? I was really blessed to have two parents that did a great job at this all throughout my life, that they would set examples. Hey, let's go help this person. Let's do this thing right. Today, I have a habit of when I get to a grocery store parking lot and I see a cart sitting out there in the middle of nowhere, I do two things. Number one, I curse the person in my heart who left it there instead of just taking 2 seconds to put it back. Forgive me, God's still working in my heart. But the second thing I do is I usually take the card and I just walk it inside. Why? Because maybe, just maybe, by my example, someone else will be inspired to do the same. Maybe there's someone in your life who, by your example of following Jesus faithfully, they'll be inspired. They'll be enabled to do good in the world. You can be the light that enables good to happen. But here's a question. What good is good if it doesn't last? Not much. Here's the thing about salt. Salt, you can see it on the screen. What's it do?
Preserves.
It preserves, right. Anybody ever made beef jerky? Cured ham? Anybody ever stored meats for long periods of time without refrigeration, right? Salt is used for that. In fact, in the ancient world, they didn't have refrigerators. Maybe you didn't know that, but they didn't. No refrigerators. So they would have lots of salt, and that would act as a preserving agent. Salt prevents bacteria from growing. Salt helps the good stuff stick around. I wonder, does your presence help the good stuff stick around? When you're involved in a situation, does it start, you know, oh, good things happen, but then you leave and there's no lasting legacy? I wonder what would happen if we stepped up and realized that we can be the preserving agent in the world around us. Look at how Paul writes in Colossians 4. He says it this way. He says, "Your speech should always be gracious, seasoned with," what's that word?
Salt.
"So that you may know how you should answer each person." Now consider this. Consider this. What if the words you spoke preserved the dignity of the people you spoke to? What if the words you spoke preserved the hope of the people you interacted with? Well, what if the words you spoke were the preserving agent that inspired people to take one step closer towards Jesus, one step higher in their life? What if you were the one that not only enabled good for a moment, but preserved the pattern for days or weeks or years or a lifetime to come? So my question to you, do you want to enable good things to happen in the world around you? And do you want to preserve the good in yourself and in others? Well, I have good news, because that's actually what happens when you take steps to be salt and light, light and salt. Because, like we said earlier, the steps you choose to take determine the change you need to make. Light and salt. Salt and light. Next slide. Next slide. Group two, what does light do? Light improves, and salt flavors. Light improves. This last week, I got all excited and motivated to do some cleaning out of my closet in my office at home. Have you ever gotten in a little cleaning kick, and you start pulling stuff out, and you're just thinking, why in the world have I kept this for the past 18 years? I can't throw it away now. Right, so I'm in there and I'm cleaning stuff out of the closet, you know, and I found something that I had forgotten about, and I decided, you know, I need to sell this thing. And no sooner had I taken the pictures with my phone to get ready to post it online to sell, I'm thinking, I can't sell this. See, this is my vintage, not fully manual. This is not an electronic camera. This is a Nikon FM camera. This shoots film. Have you heard of this? Film. It's a thing you actually put in the camera, and it doesn't work with a computer. I know some of you are, I'm kidding, you all know exactly what that is. And so this is my, and now I could, this is a 50 millimeter lens. Ooh, that looking good. You know, the problem with this particular lens though, this in this particular environment, see all the lights this way, and see, I could take a better picture if I had more light shining that way. You know why? Because every good photographer knows that the better the lighting, the better the picture, right? I wonder, is the picture of the world around you better because you're in it? You are improving the world around you. See, light improves. Take a look once more at what Jesus said in the passage we read earlier, Matthew 5:16. Here's what Jesus says. He says, let your light shine before men so that they may see your, what's that word?
Good works.
And give glory to your Father in heaven. You know the thing, you know what the thing is about good works? It improves stuff. Here's your good litmus test. If you wonder if you're doing good works or not, ask yourself, is anything improving? If the answer is yes, hooray. If the answer is no, you may be doing some kind of works, but I'm not sure they're good. Right? Light improves. Now, what does salt do? Salt flavors, man. Somebody was real sweet one time, cooked for us, it was years ago, cooked us a meal as a family. We came, brought it, ate it, you know, started to take that first bite. First thought, needs more salt. Now, my wife, I gotta tell you about my wife. My wife has an amazing gift for seasoning things just so. And she puts in the right salt and the different kinds of things and a little cayenne pepper, which is not salt, but I like it, so I have to, you know, tell you about that. Why? Because salt flavors. See, food without salt is bland. And to use a technical term, yucky. Very important term to know. It's yucky. I wonder, have you ever known a person who says they follow Jesus, but they're kind of bland and yucky too? Like, there's no fun. They're so lame. They're so not the person you want to invite to your house for dinner, because you're going to sit there and be like, so, nice weather we're having, right? Yes, praise the Lord. Okay, thanks, right? That's terrible. Listen, Jesus was known as a friend of sinners. And here's what I found out about sinners. They don't like you to be a friend if you're not fun. Right? They don't feel a sense of guilt and obligation, like I have to be nice to them because they're part of my Bible study group. No, good old-fashioned sinners say, forget you, go away. Right? So if Jesus was called a friend of sinners, you know what that means? That means that sinners wanted him to be their friend. That tells me he had some flavor. Some flavor. Tell your neighbor, he got some flavor. Flavor. That's right. Now, check it out. Your mission. Listen, followers of Jesus are supposed to bring good things wherever we go. Your mission. Should you choose to accept it? Heck, it's your mission whether you accept it or not. Your mission is to brighten the lives of the people around you as a testimony to what Jesus is really like. You know why? Because salt flavors. Take a look at what Paul writes in Galatians. switching the metaphor a little, right? Honestly, but it speaks. Watch this. Next slide. Paul writes this in Galatians 5. You know this, perhaps. He says, but the fruit of the Spirit is love and joy and peace and patience and kindness and goodness and faith and gentleness and self-control. It's Galatians 5, 22 through 23. Okay. See, if you're living a life of light, then you're going to improve whatever situation you step into. If you're living a life like salts, you're going to bring flavor and sparkle into whatever place you step. Now listen, I know we all have different personality types, and I know we have different spiritual giftings, and I'm not saying that in order to be a good Jesus follower, you have to step into every situation with three jokes and a Bible verse, right? Like, you know, some of us are quiet, that's okay. But do people smile when you walk in? Or do they roll their eyes? I know some of us are less likely to be the one to speak up at a party. Great, or even go to parties at all, no problem. But do the cashiers at your grocery store brighten when they see you because you're kind to them? Because you bring love into their life? Because you bring peace into their life? Do they know you actually care? That they have a soul and a set of hopes and dreams and fears and a future? I was at Starbucks this last week, my own little mission field, and I was sitting at the bar, a little counter up there, and sometimes I sit there because it's easier to talk to the baristas. Because I found out that, you know, it's hard to witness to your coworkers when you either have no coworkers or have no unsafe ones. So I go to Starbucks, and that's my second office. I tell you what, all of them need Jesus. All of us need Jesus. So I'm sitting at the bar the other day, and I'm chatting with Carl. Carl is a neat guy, and Carl is very obviously, he's gay. Got a rainbow pen, he talked like him. Very obvious. Cool. And I'm talking. He's a neat guy. I like him. So we're chatting and just doing our thing. So he asks me, here it comes. He asks me, so what do you do for a living? And now I'm like, okay, I'm about to be outed. He's going to know who I am. He's going to know what I do. He's going to know what I stand for. So I said, I'm a writer and a musician and a teacher as well. And it's all under the banner of this. And I pulled out my handy dandy Outpost Church invitation card. And I handed it to him, the sign that says hope for a better tomorrow and help to get you there. He looks at it for a moment. It's kind of reading, doesn't know what it is. And I can see it the moment he sees Outpost Church. Oh, hands it back. And I say, so this is us. This is what I do. I'm a pastor. And this is what I do. In fact, and this is for you to keep. I hand it back to him. A couple seconds later, he hands it back again. And I put it away. And here's what he says. He says, most religious people don't talk to me. And it broke my heart. And I told him, no, Carl, I'm really sorry to hear that. This is not right. I don't think that's what Jesus would do. And then you know what we did? We switched topics and kept on talking. Talked about his life, talked about his roommate, talked about who he used to be, his boyfriend, now he's not, talked about other things, and we had a wonderful conversation. And I thought two things in that moment. Number one, how privileged I felt that he'd be willing to keep talking to me. Because whatever understanding he has and experiences he's gone through and presuppositions that he holds, like we all do, God had given me the opportunity to bring enough flavor over the months I've been going there that he knew he could trust me to care about him as a person, even though I happen to be a pastor. Even though he knew that my worldview and his are light years apart in many ways, he was able to see that I genuinely care about him. I wonder if the people in your world could say the same. Knowing most of you, I think the answer is yes. And the good news is, when you are living that way, improving the situations you enter, bringing flavor to the lives of those around you, those are the kind of steps that lead to a Jesus revolution. Because you see, the steps you choose to take determine the change you get to make. Salt and light, light and salt. Third thing, group three. What does light do? What does salt do? Light reveals and salt cleanses. You know, the thing about light is, it doesn't take its time to drive away the darkness. And the moment the light arrives, the darkness flees. It reveals what is happening. And it's interesting because this could be taken in all sorts of different ways. But I want to show you what the Apostle Paul writes, once again, back to Paul. And he writes to the church in Ephesus. Look at what he says in Ephesians 5:11. He gives this example of this contrast between light and darkness and the things that get revealed. He says, don't participate in the fruitless works of darkness, but instead expose them, for it is shameful even to mention what is done by them in secret. Now watch this. Everything exposed by the light is made clear, for what makes everything clear is light. Watch this. I believe that your mission and mine as followers of Jesus is to bring light to the darkness so that people can be healed. Because there is no healing something unless you're willing to own it. There's no fixing something unless you're willing to face it. And so many of us, in fact, I would argue everybody, has some area in their life that it's hard to bring into the light. I know that every one of you knows people who have these things in their life that they don't want to bring into the light. But watch, I heard it said this way. You've probably heard it this way too. You are only as sick as your secrets. But the sickness in the dark can't be healed until it's brought into the light. Your mission and mine is to bring things to be revealed so that in Christ they can be healed. Heal. Watch this. We bring the revealing by the light, but what does salt do? Makes light. Salt, as you saw, it cleanses. It cleanses. See, your mission is to be an agent of cleansing in a polluted world. See, here's the thing about salt, right? It kills bacteria. It gets rid of stuff. Now, here's the really important distinction. Ready? Watch this. There's a big difference between cleansing something with saline solution and rubbing salt in a wound. Have you found that out? I says, what's the difference? One has living water in it, and the other doesn't. One has the goal of rule-based religion, and the other has the goal of restoration. See, I've seen too many people live in a way that they're happy to bring sin into the light so they can cleanse it in Jesus' name, but their method is more like rubbing salt in a wound than bringing the living water of cleansing. And here's what we got to remember. Watch this. Once again, Ephesians 6, this time. Paul writes this. He says, for our battle. You better say battle.
Battle.
Battle. You ever feel like you're in a battle with someone else when something gets revealed that's a little hard to deal with? He says, our battle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the world powers of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in the heavens. Here's what you got to know. If you're going to walk as light and salt, if you're going to be a person who reveals things and then tries to help things be cleansed, you got to remember that your enemy is not other people and what they may be doing. They're not the one that you're against. It's the spirit of deception that has them captive to do his will. If we're going to be people who reveal darkness that needs to be healed and bring cleansing, you got to know that we're here to flush out polluted ideas and patterns and usher in the truth of God's love, not beat people up until they agree with us. Here's the thing where it really comes home to me. We have a neighbor that has a Jeep, and on that Jeep he has bumper stickers. And the content of those bumper stickers are not things that I'm going to repeat in a church service. They're not things I want my son to read. I'm a little concerned he's going to read them and start asking questions that I don't want to answer. And I've been really just kind of ticked off at that. And I kind of want to go to him and say, come on, dude, what's wrong with you? We got kids in this neighborhood. But the battle is not against flesh and blood. My job isn't to reveal and hammer, but it's to be the cleansing presence of Jesus that rescues him from his deception, not hammers him with my perspective. And if I'm willing to accept that he isn't the enemy, Satan's deception is the enemy, then I might be able to bring light to some darkness so that he can be healed. Do you want to bring light to darkness so people can be healed? I wonder, do you want to You want to be an agent of cleansing in a polluted world? Well, I have some good news. Because when you take the steps to be salt and light, light and salt, that's what happens. Because the steps you choose to take determine the change you need to make. Salt and light. Light and salt. So three things. Three things. Not the three things in your notes. We'll get to that in a minute. I just wanted a real quick recap. Three steps to be light and salt. Number one, we enable and preserve the good. Jesus says, you're the salt of the earth, you're the light of the world. What's that mean? It means we enable and preserve the good around us. Number two, we improve and flavor our world. Wherever you go, is there improvement? Is there flavor that's good? Number three, we reveal and help cleanse unrighteousness. That's what it looks like to be salt and light. But you know, Jesus didn't just give instructions about what we should do. He also gave a caution about how things can go wrong. Take a look at the passage one more time, Matthew 5, 13 through 15. We'll have it on the screen. You can follow along on your own as well, if you like. Once again, Jesus said, you are the salt of the earth, but, but if the salt should lose its taste, how can it be made salty? It's no longer good for anything but to be thrown out and trampled on by men. He goes on, you are the light of the world. A city situated on a hill cannot be, what's that word? Hidden. No one lights a lamp and puts it under a basket. Now, what's Jesus warning us about? Take a look. Notice that when Jesus says the salt loses its taste, here's what he's not talking about. He's not talking about the mineral losing its properties, right? Sodium chloride doesn't cease to become sodium chloride unless some really crazy chemical reactions or things are going on, right? And then you get a whole other problem. I'm pretty sure the hydrogen bomb could probably make some effect on that, but thankfully that's not what we're dealing with. What he's talking about is, it's not that the mineral loses its properties. It's the literal translation of the word that's used there, lose its taste. It means literally contamination or defilement. It's this idea that it's not that the mineral loses its properties, but that it gets diluted by the addition of other things. In fact, we could say it this way. If you're taking notes, you can write this down. Salt lessens its potency when it loses its purity. See, in the ancient world, it was not uncommon that sometimes unscrupulous merchants would take the salt they have and they would add other elements to it to kind of bulk up the shipment, but it would lessen the taste, it would lower the quality. It's kind of like cocaine, right? So, you know how that goes. Cutting cocaine with stuff, we've all been there, right? Just taking it. Oh, I hope not. Some, maybe not others, okay. But this idea is that you take the thing that was good, but you begin injecting other things. And then that which still looks like it is exactly as it should be, isn't anymore. This is what Paul was talking about when he wrote to this church at Corinth. See, Corinth was a church that was surrounded by all sorts of different pulls and temptations. And here's what he wrote. He said, I fear that as the serpent deceived Eve by his cunning, your minds may be seduced from a complete and, what's that word? Pure devotion to Christ. What's he talking about? He's talking about that devotion losing its potency because it loses its purity. So I wonder, what dilutes your devotion to Christ? And how can you get it back? I wonder what things have crept into your life that begin to steal your affection and draw your attention away from who he is. For me, a lot of times it's just busyness. It's just flat out, I need some more sleep because I'm not getting enough, or I need some more time because I'm not getting enough done. And I find myself in a place where I didn't set out to lose my fire for the Lord. It just kind of happened. I didn't set out to try to get distracted by other things or more interested in other projects, but it just kind of happens. And salt loses its saltiness. But how about light? See, light, Jesus says nobody lights a lamp and puts it under a basket, right? That's lame. Why would you do that? Number one, you can't see the light. Number two, in that day, you'd probably set the basket on fire. Or at the very least, you cut off the oxygen supply and flame would go out. See, light needs oil, but it also needs air. And here's what happens. The light grows dim when the fuel runs low. I wonder what happens in your life that makes your fuel run low so that your light grows dim. It's great to be salt and light, but it doesn't work so well when the fuel runs low. I find it interesting that not once but twice, two different groups of people, Paul writes this similar thing. Take a look, next slide. He writes to the church at Thessalonica, 2 Thessalonians 3:13. He says, "Brothers, do not grow," what's that word, "weary in doing good." He writes to the church at Galatia, Galatians 6:9. He said, "So we must not get," what's that word, "tired of doing good, for we will reap at the proper time if we don't give up." Don't give up. I wonder, what drains the fuel of your good works? And how can you get refilled? I wonder. What drains the fuel of your good works, and how do you get refilled? Sometimes for me, it really is just getting tired. Next slide. It's just getting tired, because sometimes it seems so hard to keep up being salty and light when the world doesn't respond the way I wish it would, when the results don't come as quickly as I hoped. You say, "Oh, wow, yeah, Pastor Phil, great. So light, you know, improves and reveals and enables, and salt purifies and cleanses and makes things flavorful and preserves." And but what if it's not actually working? What if I'm trying to inspire others to do good and they just don't cooperate? Dang it. What if I'm trying to, you know, be the preserving agent, but they just keep on messing up all the time? The fuel gets lower and lower and lower. Sometimes, if we're honest, we may just kind of wish we could crawl under a basket and just stop messing with it. What drains the fuel of your good works, and how can you get refilled? Well, I have some good news. Everybody say good news.
Good news.
Good news. The writer of Hebrews has the answer. And it's so simple, it's not going to surprise anyone, but it's true. Watch this. Hebrews chapter 12, verse 3. He says this, "For consider him who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, so that," everybody says, "so that,"
"so that
you won't grow weary and lose heart." See, Paul was warning against growing weary and losing heart as we try to be light and salt, salt and light. The writer of Hebrews says, consider him who endured such hostility. Who's he talking about? Jesus. And this word, consider, it's the word analogizomai. Go ahead, say that with me. Analogizomai.
Analogizomai.
Yeah, it's like analog. It's analog circuits in a digital world, right? No, it's just for you, Rob. Analogizomai, it means to consider carefully, to think out thoroughly. It's this idea of, well, here, take my camera. When you analogizomai something, consider something, it's not just kind of taking a quick glance and moving on. It's taking the time to get things in focus so you can see what it really is. And what's the writer of Hebrews saying that we should focus on? Well, focusing on Jesus. Because here's the truth about Jesus. The more you know him, the more you love him. The more you truly see who Jesus is, what he's like, the more your heart begins to draw towards him. And here's the thing about Jesus. Watch this, next slide. The more you grow in love with Christ, the more he makes you salt and light. It's simple. It may not be easy, but it's simple. The more you grow in love with Christ, the more he makes you salt and light. You know why? Because he keeps your devotion pure as you cultivate your love with him. He keeps your fuel tank filled the more you grow in love with him. Now, confession time. As a pastor, I think sometimes for me, it's even harder than for a lot of others to really grow in love with Jesus. Because my life is all about digging in and taking apart words and discovering new and interesting things to share. And it's, you know, building and constructing messages. And I know maybe you think I, you know, sit on the top of a car somewhere in the wilderness and wait for the message to come down from heaven. No, it's work. And praise God, you know, gives me things to share. But if I'm not careful, it can be just a job, just like anything else. If I'm not careful, watch this. If I'm not careful, my love for God, my commitment to Him, doesn't waver. Because you've heard me say before, you don't have to feel what love feels to do what love does. See, love is about making a choice and a commitment. And by God's grace, my choice and commitment to Him has never been stronger. But if I'm real honest, there's a lot of times when I don't necessarily feel in love with Jesus the way I wish I did. I love Him, but I don't feel in love in such a way that my heart burns with joy in His presence and yearns with passion for His touch. And so I've been praying, even recently, God, what does it look like? God, what do I need to do? Jesus, how can I grow more in love with You? And if that's you tonight, if you've been in that place, if you want to get to a place when you are more, not just love Jesus, but are really growing more in love with Him, then I have good news. Three simple things that you and I can do to grow in our love with Jesus. Here they are, all at once. You can write them down. Three steps to fall in love again. Number one, spend more time together. If you say, you know, Pastor Philip, I want to be salt and light. I want the love of Jesus to fill me, but I don't quite know how. Here's the first one. Spend more time together. It's as simple as that. Schedule, maybe you're a morning person. Maybe you're an evening person. Whatever it is, devote the time to it. Click in the relationship. Number two, read with simple trust. I'll ask Moses to come up and play the keys for me for a minute. Read with simple trust. Man, for me, when I read the Bible, I have to make an intentional effort to not try to find something interesting in it that I can, you know, make an alliteration or an analogy or do something clever. I've been praying recently. I said, Jesus, help me just read with simple trust like a child, like I read it for the first time. Let me see You with fresh eyes. Maybe you're like me and you've been reading the Bible for years and, yep, know that story. Yep, know that one. Yep, read that before. Yep, been there, done that, got the t-shirt. Got my little Bible reading passport stamped. Maybe for you, tonight's a night to make a commitment to read with simple trust and let God speak to you in a fresh way again. Third thing that He's reminding me, if I want to grow more in love with Jesus, is to pray with bold persistence. Because it's easy for me to just say a prayer once or twice and then be done with it. But I'm learning that when I choose to pray with bold persistence, keep coming back, keep coming back. Whatever you're asking for, keep coming back. Whatever you're believing for, keep coming back. Whatever you're trusting for, keep coming back. When you pray with bold persistence, you know what that does? Is it gets you closer and closer to Him every time you come. And no matter how long it takes before that answer arrives, the discipline of praying with bold persistence reminds you that you're praying to a God who may sometimes take a little while to answer. But He takes His time because He wants to get it right. Because He loves you. Spend more time with Him. Read the simple things. Pray with bold persistence. Why do we do these things? Well, we take these steps because, listen, the steps you choose to take determine the change you get to make. And if you take these steps, I believe you'll fall in love with Jesus all over again. And I believe that you will be then a catalyst like light and salt that the world desperately needs. And when a whole group of people come together to start living like that, that is the kind of thing that can spark a revolution.
Hi friends, Pastor Philip here, and thanks for joining us today. If you've been blessed, we'd love to know. Please leave a review on iTunes or Facebook, or email us at connect@outpostchurch.org. Also, if you'd like to contribute to this ministry, you can send a text message with any amount to 84321 or just visit outpostchurch.org/give. Thanks again for tuning in. We'll see you next time.